The Farm in the Countryside podcast is brought to you by Pivot BioProven. Get what you paid for, the nitrogen that stays put, weather or not. Learn more at pivotbio.com. Welcome to Farming the Countryside. I'm Andrew McCray. On this edition of the show, we visit with Pro Farmer's Brian Grady about the 2020 crop tour. How did the results stack up against expectations, and how will it impact crop prices heading into harvest? And how should we look to market grain in the last half of 2020 and beyond? It's our topic for this week's Farming the Countryside, brought to you by Pivot BioProven. It's time to rethink nitrogen. Pivot BioProven replaces nitrogen fertilizer with microbes that adhere to the crop's root system and apply nitrogen each day. 2019 performance report data shows Pivot BioProven consistently outperforms synthetic nitrogen fertilizer year over year, providing corn growers improved yields and a more dependable nitrogen supply that isn't lost to the environment. To read the performance report, go to pivotbio.com. And for more information on Pivot BioProven, just text PROVEN to 31313. As a whole, this appears to be a good crop year for corn and soybeans. However, as the case with most growing seasons, conditions can vary. Most notably was the massive storm that hit Iowa this August that flattened crops in some fields and did heavy damage to farm structures and much more. Pro Farmer's recent crop tour looked at conditions in several states, including those hit by that destructive storm. How did what they saw correlate with USDA reports and the outlook for this year's harvest? What do those numbers mean for crop prices this fall and winter? Brian Grady is a veteran of things like crop tours, market numbers, and much more, and he and I visited about the state of the crop and how present conditions will influence future marketing opportunities. Brian Grady joins me from Pro Farmer. Brian, you have had a busy, well, it's always busy time, but a very busy week with crop tour. You know, we're going to get into some of the data and so forth, but just talk about what that week's like, because I would think that has to be a fun but yet exhausting week.
It is. It's actually my funnest week of the year, and it's also probably one of my most stressful weeks just because of everything that's involved. But, you know, I get to get out and spend time with our great crop scouts and see firsthand the crops on the eastern leg of the Pro Farmer Tour, which is the one that I lead. And then we get to meet up with all the scouts from the western leg in Rochester, Minnesota on the Thursday after we're done. So it's good to see those guys year in and year out, the ones that return. And it's great to see the crop on a firsthand basis.
How many years have you been doing it now?
Well, Pro Farmer's been doing it for 28 years. I've been out on the road for 13 years as a leader, and I did a couple years before that just as a part of the scouting team.
I know some of the answers to this, but still I'm curious about how many people are involved and how many places you're scouting and so forth, because it is quite an endeavor that you undertake every year.
Yeah, it's 4 days of basically a whirlwind. We cover multiple thousands of miles in our journeys across the seven crop tour states. This year we pulled 1,546 corn samples and 1,525 soybean samples. So those were record numbers, and that's despite the number of crop scouts being cut about in half from what it normally would be. So a great effort by all our crop scouts this year. Instead of four-person teams that we've done in the past, we went with two-person teams because of COVID reasons to try to eliminate or reduce the amount of exposure to others. So that was a change, but we didn't know going in. That was one of the question marks we had, was whether we'd get a representative sample based on the reduced scouting team numbers. Actually, like I said, they topped the previous record and pulled more than we have in the past. So they worked really hard, and I think the two-person teams were more efficient than what the four-person teams have been in the past, and so that may be something we look at as a potential change moving forward.
Brian, you know, we're used to USDA crop reports. How does what you do stack up to what USDA would do? I mean, are they totally different or are a lot the same in the methodology?
Well, a lot of the methodology is similar. There are some differences, obviously, and the major difference is that USDA does way more samples than what we do. So when I say we pulled 1,500 corn and 1,500 soybean samples, USDA exceeds that amount. The other difference, major difference, is that USDA goes back month after month and resurveys until the field is harvested in the plot that they're in. And they go to the same plot month after month for that data. So those are the major differences. The methodology on soybeans is very similar. We measure out a 3-foot row and count the number of plants and then pods on the plants. They do a very similar process to that. On the corn sampling, it's a little bit different. Our formula comes from the University of Illinois way back when, decades ago. USDA has their own formula there that's just a little bit different than what ours is. But you know, the key thing is, I think, is that USDA does the same process year after year. We do our same process year after year, and then you build up database over the course of time that you can compare back to.
What do you think is, I mean, obviously what you do is very valuable. Are there some things that you think are most valuable about what you do year after year at this time that really helps tell us some valuable information every year?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing, like I mentioned, is the ability to compare it to years, past years that are similar, the previous year, the 3-year average, those types of things to get you an indication. And really all we're trying to do is during the third full week of August, give a snapshot of what the corn and soybean yield potential is at that point in time. Moving forward from there, obviously, you know, weather conditions have an impact. You can lose some acres, those types of things. But, you know, we want to give the industry and farmers a snapshot of what that yield potential is in the third full week of August.
So let's jump into some of that data then from the crop tour, and then we can go even further if we want to look at some areas. I think one area people are pretty interested in is Iowa and the impact of the weather there, both, you know, the big storm that came through, but also this the dryness even before that. But overall, what did what did the crop tour tell us this year?
Well, we had huge yield potential out there at one point in time, and of the 7 states that we sample from, the corn yield estimates came in higher in every state except for Iowa, and you'd mentioned that, and we'll get to that later on, I'm sure. And they were up not only from year ago, which they probably should be because last year wasn't a great growing season, obviously, but they were up from the 3-year average as well in all 6 of those states aside from Iowa. The other thing is soybean pod counts made huge jumps year over year, and it was a very lowly potted crop in 2019, but in 2020 it was probably the most consistent and heavily potted soybean crop that we've sampled. And so when you look at it from that perspective, the soybean crop probably has as much to either gain or lose as any crop that we've ever sampled on crop tour based on how the late season weather is. Now, obviously, this week hasn't been a great week with the warmer temperatures and the dryness that continues to expand across the Corn Belt. So there are some questions there about how many of those pods that we counted will actually make it into the combine and how many will be aborted.
So we've alluded to Iowa there. Talk about that situation maybe prior to the big storm, because certainly they were dry. And then what did you see after the storm in some of those fields? We've all seen the pictures of the damage, not only the crops, but the farmsteads and grain bins and so forth.
Yeah, so the dryness in the western half of Iowa started probably in early July, and they just didn't get much moisture from July 1 forward. That wasn't the case in eastern Iowa, which is where I live. We did have pretty decent rains, I would say, until the beginning of August here in most of the areas. Now, there are some exceptions to that, but what we've seen over the past 3 weeks is that dryness from western Iowa has crept into eastern Iowa, and we did notice quite a bit of that, actually, as we went through crop tour. Now, the derecho winds that went through, ripped through the state on August 10th, obviously left just a path of devastation, and it was quite breathtaking to see some of that. And you know, I have friends and relatives that farm here and live in eastern Iowa and along that Highway 30 corridor. So I had seen pictures ahead of time, but as you drive across the countryside, And we stop randomly about every 15 miles along our designated path to take samples, but you have 15 miles of drive time as well. And it was absolutely just heartbreaking and devastating to see what those farmers and communities are going to have to go through to rebuild themselves.
We went through a similar situation on our farm almost 10 years ago, and we had to put a corn reel on and work to get some of that crop up off the ground. And yeah, it's not fun. Is there any idea in some of those fields what they might be able to recover? In some cases, I'm guessing total loss, but in other cases, you probably can get some. But is there any good way to know exactly what those fields are going to be able to yield now?
No, there isn't. We did yield samples on them, to be honest with you. And if we landed in a spot when we randomly went into the field and did our paces in, and it was completely flat, then it would have been a zero for that field. And we saw some fields that were completely lost, but we did see, you know, the bulk of the fields you saw corn that was moderately to severely damaged on a portion, another portion that was not quite as damaged, and then some of the field that's laying flat. And so out there within that field, there's a multitude of different impacts from that storm, and sometimes field to field and across the road from each other, and you know, just no real rhyme or reason, but there's going to be an impact. There's going to be an impact to yield. There's going to be an impact to harvested acres, because not all those acres will be harvested.
Do you have a feel for what that impact then will be when we put everything together nationally? I mean, certainly it's disheartening and tragic for that area, but and there's a lot of acres there, and there's a lot of yield there. So how does that impact the overall crop when we look at the nation and we take into account Iowa?
Yeah, if it wasn't Iowa or Illinois, you know, the two top producing states, I think then it has less of an impact, obviously, because it's Iowa and the top corn producing state. The impact is bigger. You know, just knowing how the process works with USDA, we've seen in the past that they'll take some out of harvested acres, they'll take some out of yield. But they probably aren't going to take big chunks out of both harvested acres and out of yield. So anybody that's anticipating that is probably not looking at it the proper way in terms of just knowing how the process works. So how that works is if you take a big chunk out of harvested acres, then your yield actually would go up because you're removing all those low yielding acres, and the vice versa would be the case. If you leave those acres in, a bunch of them in, then you have to take more out of the yield. So the real number is the production, and that's your harvested acres times your yield, and you end up with your production.
So do you think then that we will tend to overestimate or underestimate our production as we head into fall, taking all this into account?
Well, I think that it's going to take USDA months, and probably until the January annual production summary, to get a good handle on exactly what's out there. You know, like I said, if this was one of the smaller states, a fringe area of the Corn Belt or something like that, while it would be locally devastating, it wouldn't have as much national impact. But I think that because it is Iowa, it's just going to be, you know, one of those things where we may see USDA's estimates change pretty significantly from month to month, just until they have the harvestable data, and that's probably not going to be until January by the time they have everything wrapped up there.
I just made a trip from Missouri through Iowa, Minnesota, then through Wisconsin, Illinois, Indiana, and back into home. And what some of the farmers that I talked to said, top three yield that they'd ever seen. Would you say, when you talk about the other states outside of Iowa, is that a typical response to many of the fields that you saw, that it could be one of the top yields they've had in those areas?
Oh, definitely. I think it had potential to be, you know, the all-time record for yield. And it might still have that, you know, depending on where we all shake out. Keep in mind, in the big yielding years, it's the areas outside of the Corn Belt that pull us up. They don't pull us down, and that's atypical. And I think that you will see that this year in USDA's August estimate, that the potential's there through those southern states to really help us out. So that will help offset some of the yield and acre loss in Iowa. Probably not all of it, but, you know, I think the makings were there for definitely a record crop this year. USDA indicated that in its August estimate.
Certainly you have the crop tour, and we look at that, but you have pro farmer data as well. are the two pretty much mirroring each other, or how does the ProPharma data then differentiate from what you saw on Crop Tour?
Right. So the Crop Tour data is what we talked about Monday through Thursday during the week of Crop Tour. And it's going into fields, pulling samples, recording the data, putting it into a spreadsheet, and kicking out numbers. So it's raw data. What ProPharma does at the end of the week on Friday, and the numbers that we released on the 21st at 1:30 Central Time, those are ProPharma numbers. So we take the Crop Tour data, and then we take into account all the other factors. So the areas outside of those that we sample on Crop Tour, the storm damage, the how we think the crop will finish, those types of things. We put the national average yield at a record 177.5 bushels per acre. Now, that's down pretty significantly from USDA's August 1 estimate of 181.8 bushels per acre. And it gave us a crop estimate of 14.82 billion bushels. So, you know, that we took a lot off, but in the end, it could still be a record, and that's kind of what I alluded to earlier on when we were talking about the yield potential out there. Soybean crop, we had a yield of 52.5 bushels per acre and a crop size of 4.362 billion bushels. And once again, the soybean yield would be a record, but down from where USDA was on August 1. So I think that there's no doubt that crops have gone backwards since August 1. It's a question of how much, and it's a question of whether or not rains will come here late in the season. And if they do come, how much they'll help, because we're seeing both corn and soybean crops starting to shut down due to the heat and dryness this week.
Right. Yeah. You talk to a lot of people and say, well, the corn, there's not much difference now in the yield. The beans certainly probably still some potential. Is that what you would say from what you have seen in the last week?
Yeah, definitely. The soybean crop has more to gain if we do get some late season rains. Corn, I think, is, you know, unfortunately, it's into the final lap here, if not already to the finish line in some of these areas. So harvest is probably going to be much earlier than it was last year, and probably earlier than normal in most of these areas, just because it's kind of raced to the finish line. While I say that there's potential out there for a record national yield, history has told us that if you rush the crop to pollination and then slow cook it after that, that's usually when you get your biggest yield. So that's not the case this year. We're rushing it to the finish line in many of these areas.
As we look at corn and bean markets, the Board of Trade, we've seen a slight uptick over the last few days to a week. Is that in response to mostly weather, both the storm in Iowa and then this dry weather, or what has been our uptick in prices here recently?
Yeah, I think that the market has finally come to the realization that the dryness out there wider spread than just western Iowa. I think they were a little bit oblivious to that. And then the windstorm rolled through, and we took quite a bit of production potential off between those two events. And some of that's still unfolding right now, obviously. But the funds, they were heavily short corn. They've decided to actively cover those short positions. So, you know, there's a reason to now. On the soybean side of things, they were already long, and they've decided to put more money into the long side of the market. And probably the biggest thing that I've noticed is that the speculators were just kind of quiet. The funds were heavily short corn, and they were mildly long soybeans, but they didn't really have a reason to do much more than that. And so the markets had kind of gotten stale from that perspective. Now we've got fresh money flowing, and that gives us more volatility, and you see it in the prices right now.
So if I'm a farmer out here setting on a good corn or bean crop, or maybe it's even and not as good, but for a lot of folks it is good, how should I look at my marketing heading into harvest here? Certainly, we see higher prices in the last week or so than we've seen in several weeks before. So what should I be considering as I head toward harvest?
Well, I would still say that you have to be a seller on price rallies. So use the current price strength to market some corn and soybeans, especially if you haven't done so, and consider that to be a gift at this point in time. Now, we always want higher prices, right? But the reality is that prices aren't going to go up forever. So you have to take a realistic look at it and say, okay, what are the fundamentals? Well, in the corn market, even if you've lopped off a fair amount of production, you're still going to be left with ending stocks that are probably well above 2 billion bushels, more than enough supply. And on soybeans, you know, the ending stocks forecast as of August 1 was over 600 million bushels. Even if you lop some off, you're still going to be left with more than plentiful supplies. And as a result, that tells you that you need to use price rallies to market some of your corn and soybeans.
Well, and with that big of a crop, how much upside potential do we have? Are we extending ourselves to the top of that upside right now, in your opinion?
Well, I'd say this. If you're looking for something above, you know, 10.50 soybeans or even a 10 handle on soybeans and $4 corn, just to use nice round numbers, those probably aren't realistic. Something pretty drastic would have to happen for that to be the case. So when you look at the July highs in corn futures, you know, it's 363. You push above that, and then you're probably looking at that 370 to 375 level in the futures. On the November soybeans, you know, if we get above the recent highs here and push up, now you're looking at something that's probably about another 25 cents up from those levels. So we're talking like 935, 940 area, something in there, that where you start to run into more resistance. And as prices climb and you run into those resistance levels, you need some fresh news to push you above them and get to newer or higher highs yet.
You mentioned fresh news. So outside of weather and what's happening here, what would be any fresh news that you think could move the market out there? See any potential for that?
Yeah, China, I think, is the one to watch. And they've been actively buying new crop U.S. corn and soybeans here for the past several weeks. We know that with the phase one trade deal, they need to be active buyers here in the last half of the year. So that would suggest that, you know, they need to continue to be buyers of U.S. corn and soybeans. And so that's something to watch, not only on a daily basis, but a weekly basis. And do we have enough support there? And is there enough demand from China to keep this thing going? Once we get to a point where the market's comfortable with where we're at from a crop and supply perspective.
Anything else that we should know, whether it's from Crop Tour or Pro Farmer's Outlook and so forth, just as we head toward harvest?
Well, I think it's going to be a long harvest, obviously, for those guys that were hit by the derecho. And you know, I think the storage is probably going to be as big, if not a bigger issue, probably a bigger issue than what the crop loss was, because there was a lot of grain bin storage that was lost in that windstorm, both on farm and commercial. So a lot of that crop it's going to be slow coming out of the field. It's probably going to have suspect quality in all likelihood. And then a lot of it's going to be piled on the ground in ground storage, because we don't have the bin storage that we did before. So, you know, crop losses, crop quality, they're all going to be a concern. It'll impact your basis locally, and so that's something to keep an eye on too. It's just not about what's out in the field or what isn't out in the field. It's your ability to market it and what price you'll get for it when you do market it.
Brian, I appreciate the time and hope you get a little rest after the big crop tour.
Oh, definitely. You know, it's great to be out in the fields. It's refreshing to be back, and you know, it's good to talk to the fine folks like you that are out here allowing us to get our not only the numbers out, but also the, you know, just the impact and look at the crops across the Corn Belt.
Remember, you can find more information at Pro Farmer's website, where Brian and others are always posting the latest data. Also, remember, you can access many great programs at the recent Farm Journal Field Days. Just go to farmjournalfielddays.com for plenty of information on many topics, including some of the folks you hear right here on our podcast. Thanks for listening. I'll catch you next time on Farming the Countryside. The Farm in the Countryside podcast is brought to you by Pivot BioProven. Get what you paid for, the nitrogen that stays put, whether or not. Learn more at pivotbio.com.